I'd like first to thank the organizer for inviting me and to give me the possibility to discuss the content of works with my friend Jean-Luc Sauvageau. So the theme of this seminar will be, as the title says, differential calculus and on spaces or on algebras, which are not manifolds. No, as for example fractals or graphs. We are going to, I will recall briefly the origin of Dirichlet theory. And then we will see how to the object of this potential theory, which is the theory of Dirichlet forms, can be developed on a sister algebra with a trace, and we will see how in a natural way from an energy form, from a Dirichlet form, or dynamically from a semigroup, a dynamical semigroup, a differential calculus comes. A differential calculus in a form of a derivation, which can be used to, which we will see, can be used to investigate some situation, for example, in Riemannian geometry. We will see the connection between the completely positivity of an neat semigroup and the curvature, and the sign of a curvature on a manifold, on a Riemannian manifold. And at the end, we will see how this differential calculus allows to construct a further step of differential calculus. So, Fredholm modules on algebras or on spaces which are not manifold, and we will see some examples of this situation. So Dirichlet forms. The setting is very simple. We have a sister algebra, a good trace on it, finite or not. We can consider the associated GNS representation and the von Neumann algebra, which this representation give rise. So what is a Dirichlet form? A Dirichlet form is a quadratic functional E on the Hilbert space L2 of the trace. Is a quadratic functional which is assumed to be lower semi-continuous, densely defined, and with this trick property. The most important is Markovianti. Is this contraction property with this functional should satisfy. So here this means that if we take an element, a self-adjoint element A in the sister algebra, and we perform this functional calculus, the energy, say, of this new configuration does not exceed the energy of the original configuration. You can recognize in this property, Markovianity, one of the basic properties of potential theory. No, you can interpret this property in terms of electric potential on a network, for example. The quadratic form should be real and regular in the sense that the intersection between the algebra and the domain of the functional is simply the the subspace on which the functional is finite. No? As you noticed, we are considering functional E with extended values, so in some place can be infinite, and on a dense set should be finite, and even stronger property should be true, the intersection between the system algebra and the domain of the function should be dense, both in the L2 norm and in the norm of the system algebra, say in the uniform norm. At a certain point you will see where the theory can be developed at a purely von Neumann algebra level, but we will see that regularity plays an essential role in our discussion, especially when we construct the Fredholm modules. So the model functional Dirichlet forms is the Dirichlet integral. On a manifold M, we have the gradient operator, the Riemannian measure, and we can form the Dirichlet integral which satisfied the Markovianity property. This property is strictly connected with the Markovianity of the heat semigroup and with the property of its generator, which is the Laplacian. I cannot be more specific, but the theory of Dirichlet forms on spaces which are no more Euclidean spaces or manifolds has been invented by Burling and Denis in the 50s, a generalized potential theory which is kernel free, in a sense. It's not more a potential theory based on the beautiful explicit expression of the Newtonian potential theory, but developed the same tools. Yes?
Sir, a quick question. So, in this example, or in the example that I had in mind, E comes from a positive operator. E is of the form
Yes, it's a self-adjoint positive operator.
Is that always the case?
Yes, yes. The lower semi-continuity property means that the functional is closed, the form is closed, and so it has an associated positive self-adjoint operator. And we discussed a lot of this. I was saying that Burling and Denis generalized the Newtonian potential theory based on this property, Markovianity, and this potential theory has been used in a very clever way by Fukushima, a Japanese probabilist, to construct a stochastic properties, a very good stochastic properties, an ANT process, so with some continuity properties on the path, to associate it to any regular Markovian form, to any Dirichlet form. In the same way, with the same relation, which connects the Dirichlet integral, the heat semigroup, and the Brownian motion on the Euclidean space or on a manifold. No? In this theory, this Fukushima theory, regularity is essential, and regularity should be understood as a weak form of a Feller property, which in the case of the heat semigroup on a manifold exists, and you prove explicitly, but should not be expected in the for more general processes. But regularity is enough to construct the process on spaces which don't have a differential calculus, for example on fractals. This has been recently successfully done. Put this here. So the dynamical relative of the Dirichlet form of an energy form. I speak of energy form because usually these quadratic forms represent energy of some physical system, commutative or not, classical or quantum. So a dynamical semigroup is well known, is very well known to the audience. So the only remark we should make is that we will consider semigroups on the GNS space L2 and on the von Neumann algebra generated in the GNS representation, and these are is essentially the same semigroup in the sense that the restriction to the intersection of the domain of the spaces generates the other, no? So are essentially the same group, and in fact are they on this Markovian or dynamical semigroups, these equivalent names, one can do analysis using one can analyze this semigroup using the family of interpolating LP spaces, commutative or not. So there is a whole family of semigroups which satisfy the continuity properties and are positive and completely positive. We will consider today only this. Only this case. So the extension of the Berlin-Denis theorem, to the non-commutative setting, this setting, an algebra, a sister algebra with the trace, has been made years ago by Albeverio and de Kroon, and they proved that Dirichlet forms, say C star Dirichlet forms, so completely Dirichlet forms, symmetric dynamical semigroups on the Hilbert space L2 and dynamical semigroup on the von Neumann algebra which are symmetric with respect to the trace, this is the relation, are in one-to-one correspondence. They are completely determined by the other. There are various relations which helps to pass from forms to semigroups and resolvents. For example, this is one of these. Albeverio and Kroon work as they were working in a special realization of the L2 space, the Nelson realization of L2 spaces, non-commutative L2 spaces as a closed operator affiliated to the von Neumann algebra. Later we made an improvement in the sense that these theorems, this relation exist also even if you consider any standard form of the von Neumann algebra associated to the trace, and this is very important when you generalize, and this has been done, this relation to cases in which the trace, the state or the weight is no more a trace but is a KMS function. This is important for application to quantum statistical mechanics to produce Glauber dynamics, no, dissipative dynamics on quantum statistical systems. Now, in the first observation concerning the structure of Dirichlet forms, dynamical semigroups, and the generator should be traced back to a paper of a work of Brian Davis and Martin Lindsay, in which they reformulated the Alberio-Kroon work, and in particular they proved that the intersection of the domain of the sister algebra and the domain of the Dirichlet forms, so the element of the sister algebra on which the energy is finite, is an algebra, is a subalgebra of the sister algebra, and by our assumption is a dense sister algebra, uniformly dense sister algebra. Here we provide it's not the original proof, but it is a proof which was based on semigroups. We provide a proof based on the convexity and lower semi-continuity property of the quadratic form of the Dirichlet forms, no? Because you can reduce to self-adjoint the problem to self-adjoint element at the beginning. Firstly, for self-adjoint elements in the unit ball, then the square of an element can be written in this way. When you so you have just to show that the energy of this element, the integral element, is finite by convexing and lower semi-continuity, the energy function, the quadratic function, pass through the integral, and Marco Viani did tell us that this family of elements have finite energy. This is controlled, and so if you have an element in the sister algebra with finite energy, its square has the same, share the same property. By two Marco Viani, this can be considered also on the space of 2x2 matrices, and so in this way you prove that if you multiply any two elements in this space B, you remain exactly there. So the fact that there is an algebra sitting in the maybe dense algebra in the domain in the system as a subalgebra of the sister algebra, is a suggestion that maybe some differential calculus can be done. And here we see immediately how we can consider general differential calculus to construct the Dirichlet forms. No, the Dirichlet forms can be constructed in many ways, for example, starting from as a supremum of a bounded form constructed by commutators. There are many tools, each one adapted to the situation, the concrete situation you are working. But here we see a general way. So we construct Dirichlet forms by derivation. For a derivation for us is a map, a linear map, which is whose domain is a dense subalgebra of the sister algebra A, which is valued in a Hilbert space H, which is a symmetric, which is a bimodule over the algebra, means there are two commuting left and right representation, which is a symmetric in the sense that there is an anti-unitary operator on H which exchange the left and right multiplication, so makes the whole thing symmetric. But most importantly, this map, the derivation, should satisfy the Leibniz rule as the usual, as the gradient on a manifold or a Euclidean space. So a derivation is essentially a map which satisfies the Leibniz rule. The Leibniz rule is understood because by the bimodule structure, because we have left and right action by which we can multiply vectors delta A or delta B on the left or on the right, and we can sum. So this equation has a meaning. So what we are going to see, to prove, or a suggestion for the proof, is that if we have a derivation and we consider the square of the norm of the derivation of an element applied to an element n, A, we get a quadratic function which is, if is closable in the Hilbert space, is a Dirichlet form. So essentially, this quadratic function satisfies the Markovianity property, which is the central property for Dirichlet forms. So you can recognize that this is a generalization of that situation there, where on a manifold from the gradient, we construct the Dirichlet integral. So the proof is based on a chain rule, which one can prove for this derivation. The chain rule is this one. Means that if we have a self-adjoint element and we apply the derivation to a function of it, the result is can be represented as as applying a certain operator to the vector delta A. This operator is a certain representation of the algebra of a continuous function on the square, on a square of the plane. Euclidean plane is applied to the sometimes called quantum derivative or the incremental ratio of a function f. So we have a function f, a C1 function f. We have this function of two variables, and applying a certain representation, we get the chain rule. The representation I was referring to is the product of two and right representation constructed explicitly and elementary in this way. You check this formula for polynomials at first, and then you see that by continuity you extend to the whole algebra of continuous function on the square. By the chain rule you get Markovianity, because if you take the norm, the Hilbert norm of the two vectors, you get easily this bound, and then you approximate by a smooth function the so-called unit contraction, which is a Lipschitz but not smooth function, which gives you the contraction which should be evaluated, whose energy should be evaluated. So this is exactly the same thing at the end you do commutative case. Now what we are going to see is that for a certain point, more important, I would say, one could do the reverse. So one can construct a derivation canonically associated to a Dirichlet form, or if we want, to a dynamical semigroup. So if E is a Dirichlet form and B is the Dirichlet algebra, there exists a derivation which represents the Dirichlet forms in this way. So the minimal one is essentially unique, apart from unitary symmetries, and we call it the tangent bimodule of the associated to the Dirichlet form E. So in particular, strongly continuous semigroup on the system algebra which is symmetric with respect to the trace has a generator which can be said is a generalized Laplacian, so is the divergence of a derivation as in the in the commutative case, in the case of Dirichlet integral. When you perform this construction in the commutative case, you reconstruct from the energy in the Dirichlet integral the usual the Newtonian or limit calculus, differential calculus. In particular, the space, the Hilbert module by module, is a space of square integrable vector fields on a manifold, and the derivation coincides with the gradient operator, which satisfies the Leibniz rule. So the moral is that to a dynamical object, to a dynamical semigroup, which is symmetric with respect to a trace, there is an associated differential calculus in the form of a derivation. So the construction is long, but the steps are elementary, can be said. One sees that by essentially by applying Stein's theorem to the semigroup, that these the bilinear form on B tensor B, algebraic tensor product of the Dirichlet algebra by itself, this given explicit by this formula in terms of the bilinear or sesquilinear functional E associated to the quadratic form, so Dirichlet forms, is a sesquilinear form, so give you a pre-Hilbert structure. The action on the left and on the right on the Hilbert space you produce by completion and separation are given, are quotient of these two, and there is nothing mysterious because these are more or less the universal one, and also the derivation is explicitly given by this formula. But all the difficulty is in the all the mystery, if you want, is in the construction of a Hilbert space, in the completion of this Hilbert space. So, for I would like to give you an example of a derivation associated to a dynamical semigroup in the non-commutative case. Now, imagine we have a group, for example, a finitely generated discrete group with its regular left regular representation and reduced sister algebra in this representation, and consider a negative type function. In certain case can be realized as length function with respect to a set of generators of the group, and construct this quadratic functional E on, say, finitely supported function A, for example. Then, to construct the derivation associated to this is a Dirichlet form, and to construct the derivation associated, one can consider the representation associated, pi k, associated to this negative type function, its cocycle, the cocycle by which D can be represented in this way, perform the tensor product of little L2 with the representation space K, consider these two representations, left and right, these commutes, and what you can check is that this map, which is essentially the multiplication by the cocycle C associated to the negative type function D, satisfy the Leibniz rule, so is the derivation associated to the Dirichlet form. Now we are going to see not an example but an application of this completely commutative context setting, the one of Riemannian geometry, in which we have a Riemannian manifold, say without enclosed Riemannian manifold. On this manifold we can consider the exterior bundle, which is isomorphic, I said equal, but this is isomorphic, to the Clifford bundle on the constructed on the tangent space. Each tangent space is a Euclidean space. So there is a canonical isomorphism at the level of linear space, not at the level of algebra. The difference is deep, in the sense that lambda star is an exterior algebra. See, the Clifford bundle is a, the section of the Clifford bundle is a sister algebra, a continuous integral of sister algebra. On these bundles we have the covariant derivative associated with the Levi-Civita connection, and a first Laplacian, which is the Bochner Laplacian. Sometimes it's called, we will see why, the probabilistic Laplacian. And we have the Dirac operator, which is, when you see on the exterior bundle, at the exterior bundle level, is just the sum of the exterior differentiation plus its adjoint, the Dirac Laplacian, and the associated semigroup, the heat semigroups. When you read this Dirac semigroup on the exterior bundle, what you get is simply the usual Hodge Deram operator, Laplacian, and its heat semigroup. And of course we have at infinitesimal level the energy, the Dirac quadratic form associated to this this generator. So in this setting, which is completely commutative, one say, Davis and Rothaus years ago proved this fact. We already observed that the Clifford algebra, which is a section of the Clifford bundle, is a sister algebra, and so one can consider the positivity properties. They proved that the Bochner Laplacian generates a dynamical semigroup, on the Clifford bundle. So it's completely positive and contractive. And this happens on any, say, compact manifold. The proof is not the original one, but the one we can state now, because we already see, have some experience with derivation. The proofs goes in this way. By the metric property of the Levi-Civita connection, Levi-Civita connection does not preserves the scalar product, which can be stated in this way, you can prove that the covariant derivative is a derivation, in the sense that the Leibniz rule is true, on the Clifford algebra. And then, by the theory you've seen, you prove that, of course it's closed, you prove that this is a Dirichlet form and gives rise to a dynamical semigroup, firstly on L2, and then by elliptic regularity on the sister algebra itself. So you end up with a strongly continuous semigroup. What we proved in this setting is this result. We can consider, instead of the heat semigroup generated by the Bochner Laplacian, the one generated by the Dirac Laplacian, or if you want, by the Hodge-Deram Laplacian, and the associated quadratic form, of course. Oh, now, the fact that if this quadratic form is Dirichlet, this semigroup is a dynamical semigroup, comes from the theory, the general theory, but we prove that these two properties are also equivalent to another property of a completely geometrical character, the positivity of the curvature of the manifold. So, say the heat semigroup associated to the Dirac Laplacian is completely is a dynamical semigroup on the Clifford algebra if and only if the space, the manifold, has a positive curvature. In particular, the curvature operator is positive. We will see what does it mean. This is makes a big difference with the result of Brian Davis and Oscar Ruttaus in the sense that this result, so considering the Buchner-Laplacian or the semigroup, you cannot have a feeling of the curvature of the space. If you consider from other point of view, the potential theoretic point of view, from Hermann Weyl, for example, the semigroup generated by the Hodge-Deram Laplacian, you get that this semigroup fills the curvature of the space in this way. So a dynamical property, a potential theoretic property of a quadratic form and a geometrical property of the manifold are equivalent one another. Before to analyze a little bit the proof, I prefer to discuss some example of application. No, for example, if we have a compact surface, then the Dirac form is a Dirichlet form if and only if the manifold is diffeomorphic or to the torus, sorry, or to the two sphere. No, if the handles are more, this is not possible. So in low dimension, we have the result, but in any dimension, you can see that if you have a Dirichlet form, then the Euler characteristic of the manifold should be not negative. There are several applications one can do. For example, one can prove that in dimension less than 4, for example, if the Dirac form is a Dirichlet form, then the space is a Riemannian locally symmetric space in the sense of Cartan, not in the sense that if we have, I don't know if it's readable, two geodesics which meet in a point, different, distinct, which meet in a point, and we consider geodesic pieces, equal pieces, opposite to the meeting point, what you get is that also the other side of this geodesic triangle are have the same length. So this is a generalization of the well-known property of Euclidean geometry. The proof will be, sorry. So now I recall the proof is based on the Buchner formula, which gives the splitting of the Hodge-Deram Laplacian in the Buchner part and in the curvature part, which is one of the basic tools of modern Riemannian geometry after the 50s. But we take chance to introduce all the operator, especially the curvature operator. So the curvature transformation R, which depends on two vector fields, which is defined in this way, gives rise to the four entries curvature tensor, which defines the sectional curvature in this way, and which gives rise to the, or give rise also to an operator, R with a hat, on the space of two form, two differential forms on the manifold by this explicit form. There is a connection between sectional curvature and curvature operator, but they are distinct objects, equivalent at an algebraic level, but very different at the level of geometry, say. So what does it mean that the curvature operator, say the curvature for today, is non-negative or positive? Means that this operator between Hilbert spaces, because we are in a Riemannian setting, has non-negative eigenvalues, positive eigenvalues, say. So in this sense should be understood the statement of the theorem. This is one of the strongest, not one, is the strongest type of positivity you can ask on the curvature of the manifold. Sectional curvature, positive set control, for example, which is very studied, is require less, a lot. In fact, manifolds which have positive curvature operator has been classified with as a result of a lot of effort in eventually in the 70s. The spectrum is non-negative. It was not clear. The spectrum is non-negative. Now we understood what is the curvature operator, and we can introduce what is the main tool, which is the Bochner identity. By the Bochner identity, the quadratic form associated to the Dirac-Laplacian splits in the part of Bochner, the Bochner quadratic form, plus a term which has this explicit expression, which depends only on the curvature. It's an algebraic term, which depends only on the curvature operator. Now, already with this formula, we can already prove the theorem in one way. Imagine that the curvature operator is non-negative, then all these coefficients are non-negative. Here they multiply the square of commutators, which are derivations, boundary derivations, and even if you integrate along the manifold with the Riemannian measure this contribution, what you get is a sum or an integral of Dirichlet forms. And so what you get is a Dirichlet form. Since we already observed that the Bochner term gives a Dirichlet form independently on the curvature, what you get here is the sum of two Dirichlet forms, which is of course a Dirichlet form. So in this way, if the curvature operator is non-negative, then the Dirac form is a Dirichlet forms, and the semigroup, the Hit semigroup, is dynamical semigroups. To do the reverse, to prove the converse, we used the idea is that you want to use the Bochner identity, but we would like to have a tool to distinguish the contribution of the Bochner-Laplacian from the contribution of the curvature term, because you feel they are very different. No, the curvature-Laplacian comes from a covariant differentiation, so it's a true derivative, while the curvature part is comes from a discrete derivation, say, no, commutators. And to distinguish these two contributions, we introduced a decomposition of derivation and then of Dirichlet forms based on the notion of the Leibniz rule, if you want. No? By this splitting, by this decomposition, recall that a derivation takes value in a bimodule, so in a representation space. Any tools you have to decompose a representation, one can imagine, decompose the derivation and decompose the quadratic form, the Dirichlet form. For example, we use this one. So by this, a Dirichlet form can be split in two parts, in sum of two parts, going associated to two parts in which splits the derivation and the Hilbert space, the bimodule. The first one is called completely unbounded, and the second approximately unbounded, because one can prove that there exists a largest, a greatest approximately bounded projection, which is the means that is the increasing limit of projection, which have this property. When you compose the projection with the derivation, you get a bounded operator. And then you defined, when you constructed this greatest approximately bounded projection, you can split, because this projection is in the commutant of the action of the algebra A, when you compose with the derivation, you get the Leibniz rule is still true, and so you get two new derivations. Summing them, you get back the original one. This splitting has a probabilistic interpretation in terms of the properties of the stochastic properties in the commutative case. We don't need it today. And now, very quickly, let's see how to prove the converse of the theorem. We start from the Bochner identity, and we split the curvature operator in its negative and positive part, spectrally. Since since the positive and negative part in a Bochner, remember the Bochner formulas are positive, they give rise to two positive two Dirichlet forms. Then we can use this splitting to put the Bochner identity in this way: the sum of the Bochner part plus the positive part of the curvature origin is equal to the sum of the Dirac part plus the negative contribution coming from the curvature. Both sides are sum of Dirichlet forms, all is positive, on the left and on the right. And so we can apply the decomposition we have just introduced. Anyway, by comparing the contribution one has on the left and on the right, one arrive to see that curvature part, the curvature term in the Bochner decomposition is the in the approximately bounded part of a Dirichlet form, because by hypothesis now ED is a Dirichlet form, and so is still a Dirichlet form. So we proved that the Bochner part is always a Dirichlet form, but also the curvature 1 is a Dirichlet form. Now, using the ideal structure of finite dimensional pre-Fourier algebra, you can deduce that not only this is positive, say, but also the curvature operator is positive in the spectral sense. At the end, is a matter of Clifford algebra. And now we come to the last part of the discussion, in which we would like to go further in the consideration of the differential calculus. So we learned how to construct a derivation with certain properties which can be used as we use the gradient on a manifold for various applications, but we would like to to go further and introduce a pseudo differential calculus, no? In the but in a very initial to say first step for, no, the Fredholm modules. So a Fredholm modules on a sister algebra is a couple made by an Hilbert space H and an bounded operator F, which is such that the algebra acts on the Hilbert space H, so is the representation of the sister algebra. These are called also Fredholm representations. The operator F, we call the symmetry or the phase, is self-adjoint, and its square is 1. So it's a reflection, it's a symmetry. But most importantly, the commutator between the operator F and the action of any element of the Hilbert, of the sister algebra, should be a compact operator. No? So what we would like to construct is a Fredholm module associated to a Dirichlet form. So we consider a Dirichlet form on a sister algebra with a trace, its derivation, and we can consider the image, the range of the derivation, which is a subspace of the Hilbert space, and the projection associated to this range. So the projection P on H, which projects onto the image of its closure, the closure of it, of the image of the derivation. So this is a distinguished projection on H on the tangent bimodule. And then by this projection we can construct the symmetry of the phase associated. This is the symmetry with respect to the image of the derivation. In the Riemannian case should be the symmetry with respect to the conservative vector fields, for example. So this is just a couple of an Hilbert space bounded operator. We see that in some case gives rise exactly is a Fredholm module in the sense of Atia. For example, this is a criterion. We will see two general criteria, say, no? Commutative. No, the second one will be not commutative. Imagine we have a compact metric space, a finite measure on it, say volume measure, image, a Dirichlet form, which has the property that the domain is contained in the continuous function algebra. No. And suppose that the green function associated to the heat semigroup is bounded. This is from the point of view of the heat semigroup on a manifold, force the manifold to have the dimension 1, but there are important cases, for example fractals, which have dimension between 1 and 2, which falls into these criteria. No? Then we can prove that the commutators are compact, in fact are Hilbert-Schmidt operators. The first hypothesis tells us that by some theory of functional analysis that the spectrum of the generator is discrete, and so the Green function is can be presented in this way, uniformly converging series by the eigenvectors AK. By this we come to the to check that the Hilbert-Schmidt norm of the commutator is finite. This makes I would like to show you this proof because it's simple and makes use of the Leibniz property in a certain point. Now, essentially we have to prove that the commutator with the projection P of any function A is Hilbert-Schmidt. It is the same thing that P orthogonal AP, to say that P orthogonal AP is a is an Hilbert-Schmidt operator. Now, using the fact that when we compose P with delta, we get delta, and when we compose P orthogonal with delta, we get zero, because P is a projection onto the range, we can perform this calculation, which makes use, essentially, of the Leibniz rule. No? When we apply this operator to an element of the type delta B, we get this. Applying the Leibniz rule of delta, we have this, and since P orthogonal composed with delta is zero, we get just this term. When we evaluate the norm, we get that the norm of this vector is less than this norm here. We apply this bound to considering the eigenfunctions of the Laplacian of the generator, because this vector here, when xi k, lambda k are the eigenvalues to the minus 1 half delta ik, are vectors in the subspace PH in the range, and are form a complete orthogonal base, no, in Hilbert sense. Then we can evaluate the Hilbert-Schmidt norm with the usual formula using this inequality, and using the fact that the green function G is finite, the second hypothesis, we get the Hilbert-Schmidt norm, essentially the Hilbert-Schmidt norm of the commutator with A is bounded by constant depending on the Green function times the energy of A. A is in the Dirichlet algebra, so it's finite. This and you see here how in these estimates, in this kind of estimate, necessary some tools, some knowledge of the potential theory involved, for example here is the Green function, is essential, comes into the play. The other, the general criteria we provide is this one. It's true on any system algebra, commutative or not, and is based on this fact. To an element A of the Banach, of the of B, of the Dirichlet algebra, we can associate what we call the energy state in this way. In the commutative case, the energy state is of course a measure, and this is this measure here. This measure measure the distribution of energy on the space. In the commutative, in this case, the Riemannian case is absolutely continuous with respect to the volume measure. But there are other situations, for example, fractal, in which energy is distributed singularly with respect to the volume. They are singular one another measures, and is one of the most difficult the knowledge, the understanding of the distribution of energy is one of the most difficult problems. Now, suppose that, okay, the quadratic, if the quadratic form E, the original Dirichlet forms, considered on this genus space, the one we get from the energy state, is closable, and suppose that the associated Laplacian, the associated positive operator, has a discrete spectrum, then the commutator between F and A, A is fixed in the Dirichlet algebra, the commutator is compact, and you can also say that it belongs to to the ideal or compact operator generated by the resolvent, essentially. Recall that by this hypothesis the spectrum is discrete, so this operator is compact. I provide just this is a general criteria. I provide just an application of this in the unfortunately in the in a commutative case. But if to understand what these tools can measure, can distinguish. In the comp theory, especially, one uses several ideas of compact operator, interpolation ideas of compact operators to measure how to measure the compactness of a compact operator, and we use especially we already used the Schatten class, the Hilbert-Schmidt class, but we use also this interpolation idea 1, which is a dual of another Matthieff idea. So here we consider two algebras, the algebra of a continuous function vanishing at infinity on the Euclidean space and the algebra of bounded continuous function onto the Euclidean space. The measure, the trace, say, is a Gaussian measure. The Dirichlet forms is the so-called Gaussian Dirichlet forms because is constructed by the same Gaussian measure. And in this case, so the energy measure, the energy states or weights are measures, and in this case are absolutely continuous relative to the Gaussian measure, this one. And one can prove that. In the first case, so in the respect to the first algebra, when you consider the Dirichlet form, these Dirichlet forms, these Gaussian Dirichlet forms, respect to this algebra, what you get is a compact commutator which belongs to LD infinity, where D is exactly the dimension of the Euclidean space. This is exactly what you expect. Better is exactly the rate of the asymptotics of eigenvalues of the usual Laplacian on a compact manifold of dimension d. This complicated condition measure exactly this fact. But if you consider the same energy, the same Dirichlet forms on this other algebra, continuous bounded function, what you get is that in general, of course, the commutator belongs to this ideal, interpolation ideal, of twice dimension, 2D, for all, at least, for all Lipschitz and function, continuous function. In particular, no, if you take a Lipschitz function, whose gradient is exactly 1, for example, the distance function from a closed set, these eigenvalues, the asymptotes of the eigenvalues of these commutators follows not the Laplacian 1, the vile asymptotics, but the asymptotics of the harmonic oscillator in dimension d. And the harmonic oscillator in dimension d has a, how to say, spectral dimension which is 2d, twice. One can, of course, justify this thinking that this algebra is the algebra of continuous function on the beta, on the Stoncheck compactification of the Euclidean space. So even you have function which have bounded oscillation in terms of the derivative in the corona, they oscillate a lot. and this reflects to the fact that dimension asymptotically has to rise from D to D. So this is just I gave you a feeling of the direction of the themes we are involved in this research. Thank you very much. Concerning the Fredholm, the construction of...
Yes, get the Fredholm model. And so you take the projection on the closure of the range of the derivation. It's clear that's infinite dimensional, but it's not so clear that it's infinite co-dimensional in general.
In fact, you can say... It's difficult to apart from obvious concrete situation in which it's difficult to have a feeling of how big can be the. If you think to the commutative case of a Riemannian manifold, what is in the orthogonal complement? Closed forms, one form, and harmonic forms. The construction of harmonic objects here should be made by the Kohn theory, because associated to a Fredholm model there are topological invariants, there are the BDA, the Brown-Douglas and Fillmore theory, no? So in one should go in that sense, not it's a work.
In the case of fractal test, for example, you have examples where it's infinite co-dimensional.
Well, even there is difficult to judge. You can prove that the commutator is you can by these different tools you can have a bound of the commutator by you. But what is in the
projection is not co-dimensional.